Immigration in the United States is one of our hotter hot-button issues. Words like border and fence and amnesty can become fighting words in short order. It is often people on the conservative end of the political spectrum who argue for restrictions on immigration. Today, it's a self-described progressive who makes the argument. But Philip Cafaro makes the case on the basis of economic and environmental pressures. His book on the subject is How Many is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. Philip Cafaro is president of the International Society for Environmental Ethics and a philosophy professor at Colorado State University in Fort Collins. He's got several previous books to his name as either author or editor, including as editor of Life on the Brink, Environmentalists Confront Overpopulation. He visited the Jefferson Exchange in February of 2013 to talk about that book. Philip Cafaro, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Jeffrey, thanks for having me.
You bet. These two titles alone would indicate serious concerns on your part about population impacts on the Earth.
Yes, well, I've been working on as an environmental activist for just about 25 years now, so the concerns are longstanding. And what I found over the years is whatever issue I've been working on, whether it's sprawl or ski area expansion or air pollution issues, there's always a population angle to it.
You had argued on one of your previous visits here about the need for an environmental impact statement, an EIS for immigration policy. I wonder what's become of that effort.
Well, it's still moving along slowly, a lot more slowly than I would have liked. I had expected that to be done by now, but I've moved on from the group that's doing that, Progressives for Immigration Reform. And they're doing bits and pieces of it. Hopefully we'll see that in a year or two.
That name itself probably grabs some attention, Progressives for Immigration Reform. That's kind of a head-turner, isn't it?
It is, although when you dig down a little bit, if you actually talk to progressives, whether they're local environmental activists or labor organizers or what have you, you've got a lot of support for limiting immigration. You don't have so much support these days from the top echelons, but that doesn't mean that people don't see a connection between too much immigration and stagnating wages or sprawl or what have you.
So you kind of gave us a good rough indication there, but I want to get to the root point of your argument for placing restrictions on immigration.
Sure, and it's both an argument for having some restrictions on immigration, because some people just want to, you know, let anybody come who wants to come. So it's an argument for restrictions, but it's also an argument for reducing immigration from current levels, about 1.25 million people annually, back to about 300,000 annually. So it's an argument actually for reducing immigration. And in the book, basically, I focus on two main areas. You mentioned them. The first is the economic area. We talk a lot these days about stagnating wages, long-term structural inequality for less educated workers, growing inequality between the wealthiest Americans and the average Americans. And in my book, I go through the evidence, a lot of it garnered from economists studying this, who find that mass immigration has actually played an important role in worsening all those problems. And I go into detail about that, some of the general trends. I also tell stories from the landscaping industry, from construction, from meatpacking, and talk about some of the specifics in particular industries. And then the other half of the book is really focused on the environmental aspect of this. And here, the key issue is that unlike most developed nations, the United States is still growing rapidly, and we're growing primarily because we have very high levels of immigration. If you cut back immigration to the levels of 50 years ago, demographic projections suggest we would stabilize our population within a few decades. Instead, at current immigration levels, we're on track to add a couple hundred million people to our population by 2100. So in the book, I go through a range of environmental issues and show, surprise, surprise, that the more people you have, all else being equal, the more pollution, the more sprawl, the higher our amounts of greenhouse gas emissions, etc. So that's the argument in a nutshell. If you're a good progressive, if you care about some of these economic issues and want to really solve some of our environmental problems, you really need to get real on immigration and population issues.
You ask an interesting question on the first page of the book, Philip. Why are the immigration debates frequently so angry? I'd widen that out a little bit. Are any debates in America not particularly angry these days?
Well, you've got a good point there.
All right. So is it just more visceral because we're talking about the whole image of people coming over the border and that sort of stuff?
Well, I think it's visceral because so many people's basic interests are at stake. I mean, I've talked to small contractors, construction workers who've lost their businesses and lost their livelihoods, in some cases lost their houses, because in their view, immigrants have flooded the construction industry in Colorado in the last couple decades. So, you know, people have a lot at stake here, and on the other side of it, too. I've talked to illegal immigrants in the country who are good people, and if we fully enforced our current immigration laws, their families would be broken up, and the lives they've built here would be turned upside down. So there's a lot at stake in this debate, and, you know, unfortunately, any policy is going to have winners and losers. And so that's part of what makes the debate's so desperate sometimes.
Let's start with the stories you just mentioned about the construction business where you are in Colorado. How has immigration affected wages in that industry?
Well, it's hard to get exact figures on that. But, you know, if you talk to people in the industry, and I've talked to a lot of contractors, big and small here, they'll say that basically 40 years ago, a very small percentage of workers were immigrants. Today, if you look at Bureau of Labor figures for construction across the country, something like 34% of all construction workers are immigrants, and most people in Colorado feel that it's considerably higher, maybe half in our state. So, and Colorado, like a lot of Western states, has had a number of building booms over the past three decades. So you would think, okay, you got a building boom, you're building a lot of houses and businesses, et cetera, et cetera. You're probably going to have good times for construction workers. But instead, wages for construction workers have been flat in Colorado during these boom times. And so you got to ask yourself, you know, with all of this necessary work, what's the difference? Well, one of the main differences you see is that we've had this massive influx of foreign workers.
Okay, let's hold the thought there and come back and pick it up on the other side of a break. Philip Cafaro is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book is How Many Is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. Back with Philip Cafaro and your phone calls and emails on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Phil Cafaro from Colorado State University. He's written a book about immigration, and one of several efforts in this. His book is called How Many Is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about the pressures on the economy and the environment from immigration at its current levels. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 around the listening area. Send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So we were talking about the construction business in Colorado, building booms. Colorado's a fun place to live. People do want to move in there. So lots of construction activity, but wages holding stagnant. Are they actually dropping in some places?
You know, I haven't seen figures saying that they're dropping, but what I have seen is that they're stagnating for overall, and then if you look at particular people within that economy, some of them as individuals are doing worse. And I talk about several small contractors here in Colorado who over the past 20 years, you know, previous to that they had sort of built up pretty solid businesses. One guy was employing about a dozen people. And then over the past decade and a half, he saw that just kind of crumble away. And part of his problem was he believed very seriously in using legal workers, and he found himself on job after job being outbid by bigger contractors who didn't have those same scruples. Because if you think about it, if you're willing to hire illegal workers, there are a whole bunch and pay them under the table, then there are a whole bunch of things you don't have to pay in for, Social Security, workman's comp, et cetera, et cetera. So even before you get to the fact that you're probably paying them a lower wage, you're going to save a lot of money on that extra. And so what this guy found was over time, he he couldn't compete, and he was actually driven out of the business.
I'm a little surprised that he didn't call somebody like immigration and say, you know, hey, come on, these guys are undercutting me illegally.
Well, it's very difficult to do that. You can look into things and make the call, and sometimes you might be able to get some help on that. But actually, in the last couple of years, we've basically gone away from so-called interior enforcement in this country. So the Obama administration has decided, okay, unless you've got felony convictions, if you're here in this country illegally, we're not going to deport you. And so what that means, essentially, is just working illegally here is no longer any grounds for calling in the law.
You identify yourself as a progressive, Philip. How slowly or not was your immigration position embraced?
Well, you know, I've been a Democrat ever since I started, ever since I first voted. I've been an environmentalist. That's really what first got me into politics, and that's going back 25, even a little longer, years ago now. And, you know, over that time, I was concerned about the traditional liberal issues, traditional environmental issues. It took a long time for me to pay any attention to immigration. What I found is, from the environmental side, it seemed as if population growth was always being used to justify the things me and my friends were trying to keep from happening, whether that was a new dam project or whatever it might be. And so I looked into that a little bit and found, well, you know, we're only having in this country about two children per couple, per woman, so we should have a stable population. Where's the population growth coming from? Well, it's coming from immigration. And so I chewed on that for about a dozen years, and finally, at some point, I said, you know, I'm not in this just to put in time. I want to win some of these fights, and yet it doesn't seem to me we can win our environmental fights in the context of an ever-growing population. And so about half a dozen years ago, I said, okay, I'm going to start writing about this.
And so it all points back to that for you. You're saying that, you know, that as long as the population keeps increasing, we're going to have continued pressure and increasing pressure at that on the environment.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to give the impression that I think stabilizing our population would just solve all of our problems, because, of course, we could still do all kinds of things wrong and worsen our environmental problems. I think it's sort of necessary. It's part of the answer, is to stabilize our population.
Philip Cafaro is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. His book on immigration is How Many Is Too Many. Richard Lamb, the former governor of Colorado, endorses your book and often gets vilified for taking the same position himself and has been labeled a racist. Has that happened to you?
Yeah, it's happened occasionally, although thankfully with this current book, I haven't heard that yet. And it's kind of nice. I mean, we've had really good discussions on different radio shows around the country. I did a session at the American Philosophical Association on the book. Next week, I'm going down to San Diego for a session at the Association for Environmental Studies and Sciences. And, you know, really great discussions. So, I don't know, I get a little bit of a sense that people in the progressive community are ready for honest debates about structural aspects of our challenges. You know, we understand now that we've been losing for the past 40, 50 years on economic issues. Environmentalists understand that we haven't made much progress since the heyday of the 1970s and 1980s. I think we're ready to sort of have honest discussions.
Let's take a call from Patrick in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Philip Cafaro.
Good morning. Hey, I really appreciate this topic and what you're saying. It's really close to my own empirically. I was born and raised in California, and I'm not against immigration per se. It's the numbers that I have a real issue with. And I used to work for Greenpeace. I'm no Johnny come lately to the environment. I've been at this since the 70s, and it's not only environmental, but just as you were saying, supply and demand, the wages, the rent. You know, they're buying cars, so all these corporations benefit from the floodgates being open. It's, you know, there's literally another, I mean, there's at least 20 million illegal immigrants in this country. And, just on a darker side, I've been attacked more than a few times, you know, by some of the, you know, I guess wannabe gangs and stuff. You know, it's the elephant in the room. It's population, as well as, you know, just with wages. And with the wages rising, hopefully, there's going to be a whole nother influx. I'm very progressive on everything but this issue, so I really appreciate what you're saying and what you know. And you know, I'm not a racist. I'm a realist. You know, and so that's all I got to say for now. It's really close to my heart. I'm practically shaking.
All right, Patrick. Thanks for sharing your story with us. Appreciate that. Philip, your thoughts?
Yeah, I really appreciate Patrick's comments. And California is a good place to think about these things because, of course, we've got the drought happening right now, and you know, a lot of kind of juggling to see if they can find enough water to keep enough water in the rivers for endangered species, get the ag sector as much water as they need, get people the water they need around the state. And again, you know, slowly at first, but now more and more, people in California are starting to ask, well, look, I mean, is population stabilization part of the answer to this? I mean, we're not going to have more water in Colorado or California. Maybe we're hitting a limit. Maybe we need to start thinking about stabilizing our population and being there for the long term. So I appreciate the comment.
But, you know, here again, it sounds like a fairly narrow slot to try to hit, wanting to place some restrictions upon immigration, but trying not to look anti-foreigner or something.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true, and I think that's why so many people on the left shy away from this. I mean, if you wade into this, guarantee somebody's going to call you a racist, if only because they might be frustrated that they think at some level that what you're saying has some truth and they don't want to deal with it. And so you will get called some names if you wade into this. And so many people just say, look, you know, I'm going to deal with other issues. Let somebody else deal with this. But again, the question that all of us who care about the environment need to ask is, can we really protect what we want to protect, save what we want to save, improve what we want to improve in the context of an ever-growing population? And I think the answer comes back in sector after sector, no, we can't.
Philip Cafaro is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, philosophy professor at Colorado State University, president of the International Society for Environmental Ethics, and the author of a book called How Many is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. The phone number here is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Here's Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
Howdy.
Well, I'd like to make a couple of comments, and the guests could respond to them, I suppose.
Go ahead.
Well, first of all, my politics are so as follows. I'm a moderate progressive with right and left-wing tendencies who is a non-affiliated voter. And
that's complicated.
That's my politics. You could also say I'm a free thinker that way. But my other comment, well, specifically is I don't think that my opinion, race as a concept, doesn't exist. There's only one race, which is the human race. I think what is at stake here is the resulting culture clash of too much people immigrating here and keeping their way of living from the country they came from and imposing it here in the United States. And all that really does, it rubs up against the wrong way. It's a culture clash, and it causes unrest.
Just because they're different from what the rest of society is doing?
Well, not only that, but they insist on retaining the culture of where they came from and the country from whence they came. And I'll just take the responses off the air, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
Yeah, those are real issues that the caller's talking about. They're not so much the things that I'm most concerned about, but certainly, especially in certain parts of the country, you just have such a large influx that some people do feel, you know, hey, is this really the society that I grew up in or the society that I want to live in? But you know, that's not so much my issue here. I'm more concerned just with the overall numbers. And in a sense, I'm concerned with the opposite of what the caller was concerned about. He's concerned that people aren't changing fast enough and becoming Americans. I'm concerned from an environmental perspective that, you know, they're becoming Americans too quickly. They're coming here. They're not coming here to be poor. They want to do better for themselves and their family and consume like Americans. And so what you've got then are tens of millions and eventually hundreds of millions more Americans than you would have had living the high life. And environmentally, that's not going to work. So I don't want to say that the caller doesn't have, you know, real issues. They're just not so much what I'm concerned about.
Okay, it's not a cultural thing. It really is about numbers and impacts.
Yeah, and just to give people an idea of how much this matters, I ran some numbers, some demographic projections for this book, and what I found was that for every 500,000 more immigrants we take into this country between today and 2100, we will have 72 million more people living in the United States in 2100. So when we talk about relatively small changes in annual immigration, those accumulate and they can add up to, in some cases, hundreds of millions of more people in the United States.
Let me have it again. So if for every 500,000 additional immigrants, there's a total of 72 million more people generally?
That's right, by 2100. So, for instance, at our current immigration levels, about 1.25 million annually, we're on track to grow from 321 million today to 525 million by 2100. Now, if we instead cut immigration to about 250,000 annually, as I'm suggesting, we would instead stabilize our population at about 380 million by 2100. So a much smaller increase and a leveling off of our population.
There are four periods of immigration you identify in American history, and after the Great Wave, we'll call those the Ellis Island years. What kinds of caps were put in place on immigration?
Well, in 1921 and again in 1924, we had the first overall caps on immigration that we'd ever had in this country. Previous to that, we had had some specific bills excluding specific groups, but basically we had said, for most people, if you can get to the United States, we'll take you, as long as you don't have communicable diseases. In the mid-20s, early and mid-20s, we put in specific caps, and what that meant was over the next four or five decades, we averaged only about 200,000 immigrants annually. Subsequently, though, in 1965 and several times thereafter, Congress greatly increased those numbers. So today we're back up to about 1.1 million annual legal immigrants and a couple hundred thousand illegal immigrants annually.
So now to the politics. When polled about immigration, what do people say? I mean, they have different answers, it seems like, to different variations of the question.
They do, and that's something we find throughout politics. How you frame the question can make a huge difference in how people answer the question. From my perspective, I look for polls that try to ask these questions as neutrally as possible, without kind of pushing people in one direction or the other. And when you ask people something like the following, do you think we should keep immigration about where it is, increase it, or decrease it, you get about 40% of people who want to decrease it, 40% of people who want to keep it where it is, and really only about, well, usually 15% or less who want to keep it, who actually want to increase it. So what that tells me is that the vast majority of Americans don't support the kind of push that we've seen recently to increase immigration. But it's very interesting that that doesn't seem to get translated into the political arena. And my answer for that is relatively straightforward. The elites who benefit most from mass immigration and the resultant increase in economic growth, they're happy to keep increasing immigration, and they run both of our political parties.
We have an email here from Stephen and Eugene who says the Donahue-Levitt hypothesis states that legalized abortion in the 1970s explains a major part of the crime decline in the 1990s. If we want to control population, let's start with preserving a woman's right to choose. We could limit all the tax benefits for child dependents to two and offer a tax benefit to people whom have been sterilized. Make all health care plans cover vasectomy. That from Stephen and Eugene. That's one thought we'll let stand. Alice in Springfield, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Philip Cafaro. His book is How Many is Too Many. Alice, go ahead.
Oh, is it me?
Yes.
Alice here. Yes, I agree with everything the professor says. He's got his facts and figures. But I would like to propose that it's a day late and a dollar short, because this process should have begun probably about the time of Reagan, and everyone who said anything about it was ridiculed. And it was this fear of being called racist that stymied the left. And now I think they're just going to have to live with it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Alice. Appreciate it. Thoughts, Philip?
Yeah, I agree with Alice that we really should have been on this much earlier. And in fact, if you go back to the 70s and even into the 80s, the Reagan era, you have representatives from the Sierra Club arguing that we should reduce immigration in order to stabilize our population. It was actually starting right around there, and especially in the 1990s, that environmentalists lost our nerve on this issue and started to move away from talking about population stabilization at all.
There was quite a split in the Sierra Club over that, and I believe Richard Lamb was right in the middle of it.
That's right, that's right. And I'm a life member of the Sierra Club, so I was involved in those discussions, too, at a lower level. And again, many club members argued very strongly that we needed to be consistent, we needed to advocate for what was necessary to really create a sustainable society. Unfortunately, the leaders of the Sierra Club lobbied very strongly against taking that stand, and they prevailed.
All right, much more to talk about with Philip Cafaro. His book is How Many Is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. And as you already have heard, that gets into some fairly heated discussions, even among progressives, and some interesting comments from people on all ends of the political spectrum. We'll discuss more about that when we come back from the break. How Many Is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. Back with Philip Cafaro and you, with your phone calls and emails on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 30. Final segment on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks for listening. Our guest today is Philip Cafaro. He is president of the International Society for Environmental Ethics, a philosophy professor at Colorado State University, and a writer several times over and editor as well about immigration and its impacts on economy and environment in the United States. His latest book is called How Many Is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. You can join this discussion at 800-838-3760 around the region, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So you give a number of other examples outside of just what you've observed in the construction industry in Colorado, and I think one of the better ones is about what's happened in the meatpacking industry across the country. What has happened there with the demographics of the workforce and the wages?
Well, it's interesting. If you go back to the 1960s, early 1970s, you'll see that meatpacking was a job. I mean, it's always been a hard, kind of grueling job and a tough job. But it was also a job in the 60s and 70s that could keep a man, typically a man, and his family in a pretty good middle-class lifestyle. And that was back in the 60s and 70s. Between then and now, what we've seen is just a huge flooding of the meatpacking industry with successive waves of immigrant workers. And in the 1980s especially, and into the 1990s, that coincided with concentration in the industry. It coincided with breaking or really diminishing the major unions in that industry. So today, you've got a much more diverse workforce. Some people look at that and think it's a wonderful thing. You've also got a workforce that, on average, is earning 44% less today in 2015 than it was in 1970. And to me, that's one of the most incredible statistics in my book, because if you think about our country, we're three times as wealthy on average as we were in 1970. But meatpackers are doing much worse. Now, it's a more dangerous job. It's more a job that pays poverty wages. Instead of earning over $20 an hour, you're going to earn, on average, about $12 an hour. And mass immigration was key to allowing the industry to drive down wages and pocket more profits.
And you can see where this leads economically and where the tension lies, because it's a case of, in the construction industry, you get cheaper houses, and in the meatpacking industry, you get potentially cheaper cuts of meat. But then what are you doing to the people who are doing the work on the other end?
Yeah, and one of the things I've heard from people doing interviews for this book again and again is people saying, you know, I'd be willing to pay more for a house. I'd be willing to pay more when I go out to eat, or I'd be willing to pay more when I roof my house, whatever, in order to give my fellow citizens a decent wage. It turns out, you know, the consumer saves a little bit on a cheaper cut of meat because of those poor wages, but the vast majority of those that savings from those businesses have simply gone out to shareholders. So again, it really represents a massive transfer of wealth from workers to owners.
Another email here from Cindy in Phoenix just wants to point out that in Oregon, something neither progressives want to point out is that many formerly well-paid local jobs in the woods are now being done by low-paid migrant work crews such as tree planting. The workers earn very little and also have no health care or workplace injury coverage. So something from our particular region about that very subject. Let's go to Nicole in Ashland waiting on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Philip Cafaro, the author of How Many Is Too Many?
Good morning, Jeffrey and Philip. I'm sorry I keep calling in so much, but you keep having subjects that I just can't resist.
I don't think we've heard from you in a month. This is fine.
Anyway, I think I want, well, foremost, I'm an environmentalist and have been since I was about 18, and that is the most important issue to me because our environment sustains us. Sustains all life, and we cannot exist without it. And to have it so devastated for so long to the point where actually people can see the results of all this and still turn a blind eye in general because it's just too much to deal with, I suppose. Anyway, but as far as the immigration goes, it's really a hard question because I really am for human rights also, and I also feel that the black community here were brought here against their will, and I think many of the jobs that otherwise might go to them go to the immigrants because their skins are lighter and because of the entrenched racism. So it makes a really difficult situation, what really interests me, too, about the blacks is instead of resenting the migrants, many of them sort of align with them because they can feel, they know the feeling of prejudice better than anyone. And yet, at the same time, many of the people that have immigrated here from Mexico actually have an attitude towards blacks that they picked up from the white population here, that blacks are lazy and just so they, it's all right to take jobs.
Okay, we might be making some generalizations here.
I am.
All right.
I'm sure I am.
Nicole, thanks for that. Appreciate it. Philip, thoughts?
Yeah, you know, when I talk to African Americans about this issue, they tend to be very strongly in favor, more strongly in my experience at least, than whites, in arguing for reducing immigration. And that kind of makes sense because they're more likely to be in direct competition in some of those lower wage jobs. There's a very interesting study by George Borjas, the Harvard economist. He and some colleagues found, and this is looking at the last two decades or so, they found that each 10% immigrant-induced increase in the supply of a particular skill group reduced the wages of black workers in that group by 4%, and it lowered the employment rate of African-American men within that group by 3.5%. So there is some good empirical evidence that African-Americans are hit particularly hard by the kind of immigration that we have today.
All right, so I want to spend a little more time talking about environmental pressures and what you see as some of the main ones caused by immigration. And, I mean, if we reduce immigration, I mean, how does that really put the dent into the increase in population that you're hoping would result?
Yeah, I mean, you know, these all are based on projections. And so you can always say, well, this might happen, that might happen. We might have a huge disease and that could wipe out half our population. We might have another turn, and people could decide they want bigger families again. But basically, the U.S. Fertility rates have held pretty steady for the past four decades. They've varied on average between 1.7 children and 2.1 children per woman in the U.S. since about 1980. So that projected out would have stabilized our population by now if it wasn't for immigration. At the same time, during that past 40 or 50 years, Congress has massively increased legal immigration into the United States. And it's very clear that a majority of our population growth in recent years and almost all of our population growth going forward in the projections is coming from that immigration. So one thing, wherever you stand on this issue, we should be able to agree that population growth in the U.S. currently is being driven by immigration. Now, it's a further question, what are the environmental impacts of that? And that's something I go into in the book.
All right, we have an email here from Joe and Talent who wants to rebut what Jamie had said. He says, a caller mentioned that immigrants come here and hold on to their language and culture when they should, upon arrival, become American in all ways. My study of history says that it takes a few generations for immigrants to become, quote, Americanized, and like the Irish, Italians, and Germans, suffer bigotry from those terrified that somehow Americana will disappear. I know few recent immigrants who, if not illegal, work very hard to learn the language, adapt their cultures to ours, and strive to become citizens. So the idea that they adopt within a generation or two, they become Americanized, which raises the question then, if there is some concern that people who immigrate from other countries come with higher birth rates, is part of the process of Americanizing getting down to the same fertility rate as people who have been here for several generations?
Well, that happens in some cases, but in other cases, interestingly enough, coming to the United States can raise fertility rates. And the most startling statistic there has to do with Mexico. Mexico has done a good job of reducing birth rates over the past three decades or so. And today in Mexico, the total fertility rate, the average fertility rate per woman, is 2.4 children per woman. The average fertility rate for Mexican-born immigrants in the U.S. is about 3.5 children. So in that case, which accounts for about a third of immigration into the U.S., coming from Mexico to the U.S. actually tends to increase the total number of people. Now, in other instances, people coming from other countries can work to reduce birth rates. So it's a mixed bag.
So let's talk about the specific environmental damages. Is it less about things like pollution and more about just consumption, more consumption of water, more consumption of resources, more consumption of land through suburban sprawl?
Well, I mean, that's one of the main arguments people make against my kind of position. They say, look, the issue really isn't population growth, it's consumption. We're just consuming too much. We use too many resources. We generate too much pollution. To my mind, that's really just a confusion. I mean, when we talk about the impacts of consumption, we're looking at the overall impacts of consumption, and that's going to be a function of how people are consuming on average and how many consumers you have. So it's almost like saying, well, you know, the length of a rectangle, I mean, that's really not all that important to the area of that rectangle. It's the width that's really important. I mean, if you know basic geometry, you know that they're equally important. And I think the same holds true for population and consumption.
Is part of the issue then reducing growth of the economy? Is that part of what you're shooting for here, to go for a more steady state sort of thing? We've talked to several people about steady state economies and no growth economies. And is that part of what you're talking about?
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I try to do in this book is I try to use the immigration issue to get people to open up a little bit and think about what our overall economic goals should be. So when you look at the immigration issue and you read the business press on it, for instance, the arguments come back again and again. You know, bringing in more people will help us increase the size of the economy faster. And I think the evidence is there for that. You know, you bring in more people, you have more workers, you have more consumers, you're going to have a bigger economy. But that brings up the whole question, well, you know, what's the point of all that? Is the point just to have an ever bigger economy? And can you really have an ever bigger economy in a finite space? And I think the answer there is pretty clearly no. So this is just one issue of a number of issues that should get us thinking harder about, you know, what's the end game here? Shouldn't we be thinking about creating a genuinely sustainable economy And doesn't that have to be an economy that isn't so predicated on growth?
All right, so is the environmental issue, though, does it cross borders? Are we talking about, for example, if we're talking about protecting environment through reducing immigration, does that work on both sides of the, for example, the U.S.-Mexican border? Because you look at places like El Paso, where the city looks pretty good. Across the river in Juarez, it looks pretty awful.
Yeah, that's true, but I don't think the answer there can be, okay, let's move everybody from Mexico to the United States. I mean, the world's population is growing by about 80 million people annually, and in the you know, most optimistic scenario, you could only move a few millions of those people to the United States each year, and maybe a few millions more to other wealthy countries. So, you know, if you're concerned about environmental or economic conditions in the developing world, the answer really has to be, let's improve conditions there. And interestingly enough, you know, when you talk to immigrants to the United States, and I interviewed a lot of them for this book, they often talk about the difficulties and hardships of moving to the United States. For the most part, my sense is people move here because they feel they have to move here. And many of them would have preferred to stay in their home countries if they had thought they could get a decent shake there, if they could make a good life for themselves there. So, you know, I think long term, the answer to these problems is to try to address them where people are.
You mentioned the Sierra Club backing off from taking on immigration as an issue. Has that been pretty uniform around the environmental movement from your perspective?
It's been uniform that people have run away from the issue. They haven't wanted to talk about it. And actually, in the last couple of years, you're seeing a little bit of a movement even further on that end. The Sierra Club in the 1990s chose to take a position to not take a position on immigration. Actually, last year, they came out in favor of the Senate's immigration bill, which would have greatly increased immigration into the U.S. And that's a matter of trying to forge alliances with the ethnic pressure groups to try to get them to support environmental issues.
All right, it's a tricky balance and a tricky argument to get across. Philip Cafaro explains it in his book, How Many is Too Many? The Progressive Argument for Reducing Immigration into the United States. Philip, good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
All right, take care. And that'll do it for today's Jefferson Exchange.